On This Week in Enterprise Tech, Mo's going to take us through the latest developments in net neutrality. We know spaghetti can stick to the wall, but can any and all tools for security do so? Well, Curtis takes us through it all. Plus, Curtis, Heather, and I talk a little bit about what tools are effective in an organization and if there's just too many of them. Twy on the set.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 363, recorded October 11th, 2019. Al Dente Security Tools. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Beacon by EchoSec. Beacon is the fastest way to discover critical data online. This web-based platform gathers millions of posts from dark websites, pay sites, and discussion forums, allowing you to detect threats to your organization quickly. Book a demo today and claim a 10% discount by visiting echosec.net/enterprise. And by Tailor Store. Tailor Store makes high-quality dress shirts that are fully customizable by you. With their exclusive trial price, each new customer gets their dress shirt starting from $39. From the basic essentials to the most high-end details, Tailor Store has got you covered. Go to taylorstore.com/enterprise, offer code enterprise. Welcome to TWiT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Moreski, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise, but I definitely can't guide you by myself. Let's go ahead and bring in the professionals, some of my favorite people in this world, starting with our very own Heather Williams. She's running things over there now at Ruckus Networks and Solutions Engineering Department. How are you doing there, Heather?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, I'll tell you, I think that management causes brain atrophy, but other than that, I'm doing okay.
Yeah, you're right. I think it does. I think it does cause a little bit of atrophy on the tech side of things, but it's rewarding, right? Definitely okay. Rewarding. Well, let's go ahead and bring in another expert, our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin, senior editor at Dark Reading. Curtis, great to see you, my friend. Any more MakerCons going on over there?
Well, we are getting ready for Maker Faire Orlando, which kicks off in very early November. So one of the big things that we've been doing is live streaming the welding that's been going on to build the new BattleBots arena. We've got a great one going up. We've got a huge and growing collection of heavyweight BattleBots coming to Orlando, as well as just scores and scores of lighter classes. And then there's all the other just exciting geekdom going on. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. I love getting my geek on, but thrilled to take a break from all that and get together with my good friends on TWiT.
Thanks, Kurt. I'm definitely thrilled that you were both here today. We do have a fantastic show for you guys today. Not only are we going to talk a little about, well, actually, Mo's going to talk a little about net neutrality. She's going to get us all up on our soapboxes there, I'm pretty sure. We have spaghetti code, but now we actually might have spaghetti tooling as well. Well, Kurt's going to talk a little about how that's true in the security realm. Plus, we're going to talk a little bit about SD-WAN and what it all actually has to offer up to us. But before we get into all that goodness, let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. Now, it wouldn't be a week without me giving you your fulfillment of zero-day attacks. Now, this week, Apple's in the news with their iTunes and iCloud programs. On Windows, if you ever inspect your running services and you have Apple apps installed, you'll probably see that Bonjour service running. Now, side note, actually makes me feel a little uncomfortable seeing that this thing's running all the time. In fact, when you uninstall Apple programs, somehow Bonjour stays around. But it looks like my feelings weren't that unwarranted. The vulnerability that was found by researchers from Morphosec is actually in the Bonjour component, which is being used by both iCloud and iTunes on Windows. Now, these apps use it for a couple reasons, mostly to deliver future updates, but also to find media libraries and other resources on the local network. Now, what was the attack here? Well, essentially, the Bonjour service was rerouted to look in a different place for the software update.exe. Now, that was used to invoke a malicious version of the executable, but the malicious version of the file didn't actually have an .exe extension, So virus protection and other services wouldn't scan it. Now, how did this service make such a mistake? Well, this is a common software bug called unquoted path vulnerability, which, like it's in its name, means a developer forgets to surround a file path with quotation marks. Pretty simple, right? Well, since it's unquoted, it can be escaped to inject other paths to the files. Since the Bonjour service is a promoted or higher privileged service, when it invokes another executable, that actually runs at the higher privileges, right? It gives kind of passes along the privileges. Well, unquoted path vulnerabilities have been found in other programs as well, including an Intel graphics driver, the ExpressVPN, and the ForcePoint VPN. Now, researchers did notify Apple, and Apple responded with a patch to the vulnerability in both iTunes 1210.1 for Windows, iCloud for Windows 7.14. Now, seeing that most people don't pay attention to the updating apps like this on their Windows machine, since they aren't always open that often, you might want to check that auto updates are on or go and manually update right away. As we've always said on this show, your network is only as secure as your weakest link. And if your users are connecting their Apple devices to their PC, they might be your weakest link.
Well, to the surprise of practically no one, attackers are hiding behind trusted domains and encrypted links. Attackers attempting to dodge more advanced security defenses increasingly are adopting more sophisticated techniques to fool victims with their malicious email messages and websites. A new mid-year report from security firm Webroot found that 1 in 4 malicious URLs use a legitimate domain in an attempt to improve the success rate of an attack. In 94% of the cases, the attacker used a URL shortener to mask a malicious domain in order for it to appear legitimate. In the first half of the year, the company found 1.5 million phishing URLs, accounting for about 1 in 50 URLs encountered by its customers. The overall effect is that users are losing one of the most significant signs of a potentially malicious attack, a URL that appears suspicious. As one of the researchers said, when you see that little lock icon in your browser, it just means that the information you transmit on that site is encrypted and securely delivered to where it's going. There's no guarantee that the destination is safe. Over the past decade, attackers have created ways of camouflaging their malware using techniques that create variants to evade signature-based antivirus scanning. That strategy is now becoming ubiquitous, with 95% of all malware samples encountered by Webroot software having a unique signature, up from 92% last year.
Non-programming InfoSec Junkie. In an article in Dark Reading by Iraz Yalin, the director of security research at Checkmarks, it really struck me because I'm always intrigued by things that break me out of my comfort zone. And as someone who hasn't coded since I tried to recreate war games in BASIC on my Commodore 64, anything involving software engineering is definitely out of my comfort zone. But all sorts of businesses are relying on APIs, application programming interfaces, so I thought it was time for me and maybe some of you to quit looking squinty-eyed at APIs like there's some kind of backdoor. This article, which looks squarely at the vulnerabilities inherent in APIs as well as some mitigations, is well timed for that. We frequently talk about recent breaches and vulnerabilities here on TWiET, and there's no doubt that while attackers continue to take advantage of vulnerable people, processes, and technology, they're also ever on the lookout to be able to expand their range of targets. APIs in particular have become a focus, and because of their wide implementation, they're likely to be one of the most exploited vectors for data breaches within enterprise web applications in upcoming years. With this, protecting APIs is becoming more important. The article explains the difference between traditional apps and API-based apps that can take advantage of the faster CPU and extensive memory available on modern client devices. The example the author uses reminds you of how painful an exercise it once was to try to make an airline reservation, for example, on a smartphone that was accessing a system that was designed for a large computer monitor. Modern apps use API calls that interact with back-end servers primarily to retrieve data, but also allow the mobile device itself to perform almost all the processing load. And while this improves the user experience, it does create three areas of risk. It exposes sensitive data, interception communications risks, and also launching denial of service DOS attacks against the backend servers. In an effort to help organizations, developers, and application security teams become more aware of the risks of APIs, the author has helped spearhead the OWASP API Security Top 10 project that you can learn more about at OWASP.org. And it makes me happy that this is a cold, rainy weekend here in East Texas, because now I have my Saturday reading planned.
Now, machine learning libraries are actually becoming a big hype in the enterprise space because it actually allows organizations to build applications faster without having to deal with all the common platform complexities. Now, the Torch library is a good example of this. It's an open source machine learning library or scientific computing framework with a wide range of algorithms for deep machine learning. However, Torch doesn't focus on any one deep learning space. That's where PyTorch comes in. Now, it's an open source library from Facebook based on the Torch library, and it focuses on applications for computer vision and natural language processing. Now, such companies like Uber and their pyroprobabilistic programming language software uses it. Now, the advantage of PyTorch is that it uses tensor computing with strong acceleration via the GPU, and it focuses on deep neural networks. However, the training of the models have always been an issue, causing a lot of organizations to stop slowly adopt it because it actually takes a long time and it's slow performing. Now, however, recently, Facebook released the latest version of its deep learning library, PyTorch, with quantization and Google Cloud TPU support for speedier training of the machine learning models. Now, quantization is the ability to quantize a model for inference on to either server or mobile devices. It's also a way to perform computation at reduced precision. Now, tensor processing unit support begins with the ability to train a model with a single chip and will later be extended to cloud pods as well. Now, in addition to new support, it's also called out PyTorch Mobile for development or deployment of ML on edge devices, starting with Android and iOS devices. Now, including Crypt10, a tool for encrypted machine learning, and Captum, a tool for explainability of machine learning models. Now, interesting enough, Facebook has been working on privacy-preserving models with Google's DeepMind research scientists, and the latest release actually shows all that technology. Now, think of it like this. Tesla, Microsoft, and Uber are some of the companies that have adopted PyTorch. It sounds like the latest release, PyTorch might just become the de facto tool for doing machine learning and deep learning.
Here is what's probably the most important question we'll ask today. Can the Girl Scouts save the moon from cyber attack? No, that's not the title of a new B-movie. It's what's going to be asked on October 19th when approximately 3,000 Girl Scouts across the country from grades 6 to 12 will participate in the first ever Girl Scouts National Cyber Challenge. Raytheon, with the help of mentors within the organization, has partnered with the 107-year-old youth organization for girls for the one-day event, which will cover such topics as cryptography, forensics, social engineering, and ethics. Organizers say the girls will be prompted to respond to a futuristic simulation scenario. A moon colony has been hacked. Participants will learn cybersecurity skills and team up to identify the hackers, trace the origin of the cyber attack, and secure the colony's safety. Now, this is important because women remain far outnumbered by men in the cybersecurity profession. Some studies put the percentage of women in security at a mere 11%, although more recent research from ISC Squared put it now above 20%. In either case, we need young women to know this is a viable career choice. It's not only something financially advantageous, but it's where there is flexibility for a work-life balance. And on a personal note, it's a topic and a profession where you get to meet some of the coolest people on earth. Anyway, more information can be found on the Girl Scouts website. If you have young women who are interested in STEM in your circle of friends or acquaintances, let them know.
That blip makes me so happy. Making DevSecOps part of your culture. A new article in Dark Reading by Steve Martino, Senior Vice President and Chief Information Security Officer at Cisco, discusses how to bring developers and security teams together. The complexity involves changes in approaches to both technology and culture. His advice to CISOs is to integrate security automation tools and to begin working with developers much earlier in the production cycle. What's nice about the article is that it doesn't just coherently describe the problem. It lists out specific approaches that CISOs can take to bring InfoSec and developer teams together. The first step is to develop trust between engineering, operations, and security teams. He recommends a manifesto available at devsecops.org and establishing both mutual accountability and defining high security standards. Then prove it out before trying to automate everything. Use hackathons followed up by post-test readouts. And the real key is to continuously validate. New resources and other changes mean that teams need to keep guardrails up to date with continuous security validation and real-time monitoring of security logs. There are challenges and risks, yes, but with the increase in products and services that use data analytics, reside in the cloud, and run on mobile platforms, CISOs today can't afford the outdated DevOps and security later approach anymore.
Now, firewall appliances are supposed to give you a sense of better security, right? Well, as long as they're in front of your network, whatever's behind the wall is secure, right? Wrong. Now, according to researchers, the CyberRealm firewall appliances have a vulnerability that can allow attackers to gain access to a company's internal network without a password. Now, the vulnerability allows an attacker to remotely gain root permissions on a vulnerable device, giving them the highest level of access by sending malicious commands across the internet. The attack takes advantage of a web-based operating system that sits on top of the CyberRealm firewall. Now, the CyberRealm devices are typically used in large enterprises, sitting on the edge of the network and acting as a gateway to allow employees to while keeping hackers out. Now, these devices filter out bad traffic and prevent denial-of-service attacks and other network-based attacks. Now, they are also include virtual private networking or VPN, allowing remote employees to log into their company's network when they're not in the office. Now, all the attacker would need to do here is have the IP address of the vulnerable device, and away they go. Now, getting the vulnerable device was easy because researchers could actually go use a search engine like Shodan, which lists around 96,000 devices accessible to the internet that have this vulnerability. Now, this is not the only flaw we've had in the corporate VPN providers in the past. Notably, Palo Alto Networks, Pulse Secure, and Fortinet, which allowed hackers to gain access to a corporate network without needing a user's password. Now, many large tech companies, including Twitter and Uber, were affected by the vulnerable technology, prompting Homeland Security to issue an advisory to warn of the risks. This just goes back to the normal line we give here on TWiET, that make sure you keep your devices up to date, or in this case, auto-updated. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have actually a pretty great set of bites. Before we get to all of that, let's go ahead and thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Beacon by EchoSec. Now, sometimes discovering things about your network and infrastructure requires more than just having the data on your network. Now, if you want to stay ahead of the game and be a little bit proactive rather than reactive, you need data that you don't have. Now, EchoSec has been the discovery tool for all social media forums and news, but they just now released their newest product called Beacon. Now, this product will protect your information with dark web intelligence. Now, Beacon helps you discover threats, learn more about the attackers and their motives, and prevent future attacks. Now, that is some cool stuff. This lets you be on the offense rather than on the defense right out of the gate. Now, within minutes, Beacon will show you leaked personal identifiable information. Now, you obviously know that one leaked email address can quickly lead you to the person's phone number, home address, information about their family, and even their favorite movies. Now, they can also show established dark web information like fraudulent credit cards, guides on how to hack specific companies, and more. Also, they show large-scale data breaches. Detecting these issues early means you can inform your clients and stakeholders before they hear on the news. They also have the ability to show cloud service vulnerabilities. If your company uses any cloud services, be the first to know if those services have weak spots that could affect you. Now, Beacon all allows anyone on your team to scan for threats quickly across onion sites, paste sites, and message boards without the need for Tor browsers. Now, it's sophisticated, yet really simple to use, and it parses the data before delivering it to you, so you and your team are not at risk of being exposed to any implicating image content. Now, global organizations trust Beacon to discover critical online threats and better protect their information and their people. Finding leaked data, information breaches, and other vulnerabilities early is imperative for the safety and security of communities, individuals, and brands. Don't be left in the dark. Discover key data from hidden sources before they impact your organization. Book a demo today of Beacon and claim a 10% discount by visiting ecosec.net/enterprise. That's ecosec.net/enterprise to receive your exclusive 10% discount. And we thank Ecosec for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, let's go ahead and jump into the bites. I'm actually going to throw it over to Heather first, because there's actually a really great bite about net neutrality, and I think she has a pretty good opinion about that.
I don't know about pretty good, but I definitely have an opinion. So earlier this week, a District of Columbia court, those of us who are in favor of net neutrality, not a complete win, but not a complete blow either. For those of us who misread the title originally, it felt like a blow, because I thought at first when I read the headline that we had that net neutrality, the fight for it had been won entirely. So what happened is the FCC has been they're allowed to move forward with net neutrality, but they're not going to be allowed to preemptively stop states from adopting their own potentially stricter rules. And so by doing this, the fight shall go on. So the court battle was a case brought by Mozilla against the FCC, and it goes through a myriad of bizarre questions and arguments, including one: can a smart washing machine make phone calls? Well, it depends. Did you teach it to dial the phone number? but the part about where the section about the state laws, that one actually turned out to be pretty straightforward. And so the ruling said that the FCC was arguing against having a patchwork of inconsistent regulations, and the court actually came down pretty heavy and disagreed with that. They said that the FCC Congress hasn't given the FCC a direct authority to have sweeping control over local law, and they can't just simply say that a rule is not valid or that it is it conflicts with them without having to prove it and go back to court and prove this. So there's some pretty interesting things. The one thing that this opens the door for is we've got 34 states out there that have either already introduced or have passed net neutrality rules, including the one in California that was been dubbed by the Electronic Frontier Foundation as the gold standard. So this one prevents blocking and throttling, and it also is going to prevent things like ISPs doing zero rating against certain apps. Like in 2014, Netflix was throttled back. And it also is supposed to try to prevent things that, like what happened last year in the middle of some wildfires, where a carrier throttled first responders service and potentially life threatening and life saving messages were not able to get through. So there are some pretty serious concerns about this. I clearly have an opinion about the stance that Chairman Pai has taken with this, there's some questions I think that they're better better prepared to answer. So, Curtis, I'm going to start with you. And I was talking about California's SB 822. And again, the EFF has called that the gold standard. Chairman Pai's position is that laws like the California bill should be considered illegal and anti-consumer, despite the fact that these are supported by consumers. He has claimed to defend states' rights, except for when they pass protectionist laws hamstringing broadband competition. And then he comes out actually in favor of what they're doing. There's a dichotomy here between, you know, are we for states' rights as long as they're doing what he wants them to do? And I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm going to let you rant about this for a little bit and tell me where I may be a little bit off base.
No, I don't think you're that far off base. I do think that this position from the FCC is consistent with other decisions by the current administration. And when it comes to an illustration, let's look at California. In another instance, California is a state that had negotiated different emissions rules for automobiles that were more strict than those in the other 49 states. The automobile manufacturers had all agreed to these. They had negotiated them. But earlier this year, the administration filed suit and basically had the EPA say that those tighter restrictions were illegal, that states don't have the right to pass their own regulations. And it is typically done in the name of consistent national rules for corporations to follow. In other words, anything that makes it more expensive for a corporation to do business is obviously illegal and unconstitutional. You see some of the same things at work in individual states, including states that have Republican-controlled legislators. Republicans have typically been those who have promoted the notion that government is best when it is closest to the governed, except in states like mine, where you have had the state legislature deny cities the right to regulate particular business practices. And you've seen this in things ranging from plastic bag bans to most recently plastic straw bans. There are states, areas that want to do things like control the chemicals in sunscreen because they can be harmful to coral reefs. All kinds of things, but basically the governing principle seems to have become that if anything interferes with the right of something with Corp, Inc., or LLC at the back end of its name, then it must be unconstitutional, illegal, and most likely immoral.
Well, remember, corporations are people, too. So thank you, Curtis. So, Lou, I'd like to let's take a different look at this. There are other countries that have abandoned net neutrality. And so there's maybe some lessons that we could learn from that, either positive or negative. So do we have good information from the impact this has had on consumers in other countries? And what can we expect? Maybe what lessons should we be learning from them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, when we talked about this before, I went and actually looked up and saw how many countries either never had new net neutrality or they just recently have changed their rules around this. And there's actually pretty shocking around the world, actually, where there's countries where they just recently changed their rules and there was a significant impact, especially for businesses and organizations. Now, the one that really kind of threw me for a loop is when I looked into Portugal. They have no net neutrality. And internet providers there are actually splitting the net into packages where they actually go and say, okay, we'll have a messaging package or a social package or video package or music package or email, or they have bundles. And each package either €4.99 in euros or €6.99 or here and there, and you just keep kind of adding on or you get a bundle. And what's actually happening is they're actually able to monetize on the different types of data that you're sending over the internet. And so that's a perfect example of kind of almost the extreme of where things can go. And I think it's a good message to kind of send to us of, well, you know, if you're going to let them do this, then they're going to come up with better ways and easier ways to monetize on their data, especially since these other kind of like 5G and other technologies are pushing their broadband costs down, then they're going to find other ways to charge you, right? And so there's some other examples too as well. There's France and Russia. Canada doesn't have full net neutrality as well. But there's a laundry list of countries out there. But I think, you know, the one that from Portugal definitely kind of opens my eyes to the negative possibilities that can come through here.
Thanks, Lou. Yeah, one of the things that really worries me about this is the some of these countries where they've actually literally had to put multiple SIM cards in their phones in order to move, depending on which app they didn't charge for data and when they would run out of data switching back and forth. I can see it being a slippery slope, and I'm worried about us what we do when we as we get used to accommodating these kinds of moves. So thanks so much. Sorry, I'm reading the chat room at the same time. You guys are a little bit crazy today. Lou, I'm going to go ahead and throw back to you so that you can take us to our next ad.
Absolutely. Before we get to Curse, we do have a great Another Bite going on, but we do want to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Tailor Store. Now, it's actually hard to get custom quality shirts that fit us, right? I know, because I've tried, and it's not easy. Well, that's why I'm super excited that Tailor Store is on Twiat. They offer high-quality made-to-order dress shirts for both men and women, and they're fully customizable and tailored to your measurements. Now, first of all, not only they actually have an endless set of combinations, but the experience is actually a ton of fun as well. Now, you don't know your exact size? Well, they have an amazing fun app called Size Me that actually revolutionizes the measurement and process using an advanced technology and algorithms. Now, you use your mobile device, you point it at yourself, and bam, they get the right size. I'm not kidding. They get the right size. You no longer need a tape measure. I literally received my shirt, and it was a perfect fit. In the voice of Ace Ventura, like a glove. Now, it only took a couple seconds to do Tailor Store, to get the measurements. Now, I got to focus on the fun part of the experience, which is actually going to pick out all the fun stuff and all different customizations. As a 100% carbon neutral business, Tailor Store challenges the traditional fashion industry with its new way to purchase clothes. Ready-made garments, off-the-rack sizes have no place in the modern world. People are individuals, and Tailor Store embraces that individualism. Now, they are virtually endless options to choose from. They have a selection of finished designs that you can actually just directly purchase or use as a starting point for the customization. Now, their perfect fit guarantee takes away the risk for ordering. Now, if your shirt doesn't fit as you'd like, they actually will remake it for free. Now, just snap two pictures of you wearing the shirt. They make the necessary adjustments and send you the new shirt promptly at no cost. There are no returns. No, the faulty shirt is yours to keep or give to charity. Now, gone are the days when custom made to measure shirts were an item of luxury. Wherever you are, look and feel your very best in a perfect fit clothes made only for you by Tailor Store. With their exclusive trial price, each new customer gets their dress shirt starting from only $39. That's 50% off the regular price. Go to taylorstore.com/enterprise with offer code enterprise to get yours. You also get free shipping. Terms and conditions apply. Now that's taylorstore.com/enterprise with offer code enterprise. Experience the unrivaled fit and comfort of Tailor Store's hand-picked fabrics for yourself. We thank Tailor Store for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, let's go ahead and go back into the bites. We're going to have to jump over to Kurt. Kurt, you have an interesting one here. We all know about spaghetti code and when it comes to developing software, but I've never heard of spaghetti tools.
Well, this is a reference to the probably apocryphal practice of throwing spaghetti against a wall and seeing whether or not it sticks to test for doneness. Too many companies have the practice of throwing a lot of things at the metaphorical wall to see what will stick. And new research suggests that it's a strategy that has some pretty bad implications for security. Radware recently surveyed some 300 senior executives, security researchers, app developers, and IT professionals from organizations with worldwide operations. The survey focused on the types of applications, security technologies that organizations are deploying, the responsibility for the AppSec function, and the most prevalent threats and other topics related to web application security. The security vendor discovered that a high percentage of organizations are using, well, this throw it against the wall and see what sticks approach to security technology, and it's not always optimized for interoperability. Now, 75% of the companies in the survey had a web application firewall, 63% had a cloud web application firewall service. 59% did code reviews. 53% said they were using tools for dynamic application security testing, static testing, and runtime application self-protection. Now, more than half of those using containers also had container security tools, including those specific to Docker. Now, there's a thin line here between a concept that's very good and a concept that's very bad. The very good concept, security in depth. This has been compared to Swiss cheese. You know, that block of cheese that has holes in it. All security is going to have holes in it. The idea is that by layering your security technology, none of the holes go all the way through. Something somewhere is going to catch the bad guys. Well, a lot of companies are doing that, but they're not being very, well, let's call it disciplined about the process. What they're doing instead is just throwing technology after technology at a problem. Sometimes after suffering a breach of some sort, sometimes just after the latest salesman comes through and buys the IT director a nice dinner. One way or another, though, what they end up with is technology that can fight against other technology already in place, technology that can give conflicting results to the security team, and security tools that can do more harm than good, sometimes simply by giving a highly inflated sense of how secure the infrastructure really is. Now, this problem is getting worse as we move to architectures like containers, microservices, serverless infrastructures, because each of these, according to many of the vendors in the space, require their own layer of security, their own type of technology to make them secure. And so if you have some on-prem servers, if you have some cloud servers, if you have some containers, if you have some virtual machines, if you have some serverless functions, do you really need a separate firewall for each of these? Do you really need separate malware scanning for each of these? Do you really need some sort of separate, well, filter for each of these? If you do, how do you make sure they're all working together? How do you make sure they're not fighting against one another? How do you make sure that the results from one, the technology in one layer, isn't actually masking a threat that should be picked up by another? So let me come back. Lou, you and I have discussed this previously, but I'll ask it again. Do you see this proliferation of tools, not just in the security space, but in the entire IT infrastructure, as being a genuine problem? Or is this something where, well, shady journalists like me and even shadier researchers are making up a problem out of whole cloth just to have something else to talk about?
It's an issue. I mean, it's a big issue no matter where you go. I think, both on the services side, on the DevOps side, on the security side, no matter where you go, you're always going to have a ton of tools that do a ton of things. And there's not just kind of one-stop shop tools that kind of aggregate everything together. And you see this problem even in some organizations I've visited where they'll have a service over here and a service over here. And obviously, like you said, they might be using, functions that as a service, or they might be using Lambda services or so on over here. And they might be using kind of web apps over here. And they're all kind of being hosted in different places, and they're being deployed in different ways. And they're being secured in even more different ways. And so these types of problems happen, especially in bigger organizations. And there's not really an easy way to consolidate. Now, a lot of organizations are starting to move more towards, as we'll talk later, maybe about SD-WAN, as well as the ability to deploy things in more of a kind of a centralized way, so like in a containerized way, with Kubernetes and so on, and then securing those things in a very specific way. So you can still have web apps or functions as a service, or being able to host Windows or Linux inside these containers, and then you secure them and your kind of pipeline to deploy them and secure them are in the same way. And then you're seeing a lot more services come out of the woodworks that are doing this for you. So they're doing this in a way like Amazon and AWS and Azure are allowing you workflows that allow you to do this with even some legacy type applications so that you can go and follow this kind of same route for all things. So all of your security is maintained the exact same way and so on and so forth. So there are companies out there trying to make this better. But with the heterogeneous set of tooling and the heterogeneous set of applications that are out there today, it's almost impossible to consolidate. And I think organizations are going to continue to try hard to do so because it's just too expensive not to.
Well, that expense is an important consideration. In many cases, it's the only consideration that management cares about. Mo, I want to ask you, it seems to me that each of these tools, each of these layers is going to have some overhead, going to have some infrastructure cost associated with it. Now, you are armpit deep in the network of just about every organization you come in contact with. Do you think that we're reaching a point where the network and infrastructure overhead of all these different tools is starting to have an impact on total network performance?
That's a really good question. And I don't know that I know how to answer that because you have to realize that I used to run voice over ATM. And so if anybody knows anything about high overhead, it's the people who are veterans of that. And also, I'm struck by remember, no matter how much bandwidth we have, we're going to find a way to use that. And we just seem to keep finding more ways to either increase bandwidth or to buy back the bandwidth that we're squandering with some of these activities by becoming more efficient in some other ways. I know in Wi-Fi, we keep getting faster. And the latest protocol updates have been, we've been getting it back by becoming more efficient. And the problem is that you're right on the other end. We tend to squander those gains by doing some other pretty crazy things. I'd like to address a couple of things, though, that you talked about earlier. First of all, from the get-go, as somebody who likes to cook, let me assure you that even the rawest of spaghetti will stick to the wall, and this is a terrible test. Don't throw your spaghetti against the wall and assume that you have now gotten it to the al dente stage. This is just not an acceptable or valid test. But moving past that, and not to get stuck in the whole lies, damn lies, and statistics, but one of the comments that you made earlier was that these guys, that more than 2/3 had deployed microservices and containers, but 90% had a DevOps or a DevSecOps team in place. And I want to look at that number for just a second, because first of all, who the heck are the 10% that are doing this work and they didn't even have a DevOps team in place? How are they really are just throwing spaghetti against the wall in that case. What I would have liked to have seen more is the numbers that would have broken out, how much of it was DevSecOps? Because let's go back again we could almost go full circle from this bite to an earlier blip that I talked about, where we really need to get into, we really need to start talking about doing security not as an afterthought, but from the very beginning and not just as a slap on at the end. The bigger problem that I'm seeing, especially because in a lot of these cases we're talking about IoT devices, we're taking an enterprise grade product or network, and then we're sort of introducing these other devices like the IoT devices that are consumer grade. They were developed based on time to market and cost of goods. At no point was any of the development put in that involved security. So how is it that we're worrying about afterwards and just slapping on to each one of these little pieces, oh yeah, we're going to do some security here? There was another comment that you made really reminded me of something. How much do you want each one of these components coming in its own bubble wrapper? Do we need a firewall on absolutely every component or in front of every single component? Since we're talking about single pane of glass and being able to manage across the way, why is it that we're trying to look at each individual component and then manage them separately? I think this is almost a, I hate to say it, it's almost like, you know, the 1980s called and we want our network back. I think that this is going backwards, not forwards. This is a backwards way or an old way of looking at it.
Okay, so I want to probe that just a little bit, because it seems to me that we've got two issues that we're talking about. One is the tools that we're using, the apps, whether they be business production apps, line of business apps, or development apps, or security apps. All are different apps for different purposes. The other thing is the development and deployment discipline, whether it's Agile or Agile's follow-on, DevOps, or the whole continuous deployment, you know, this whole range of things. And then going back, going seriously old school, all the way back to waterfall. So I guess one of my questions is, can you divorce the tools that we're talking about from the discipline? Or is the proliferation of tools an inevitable, necessary, yet unintended consequence of the movement from the waterfall development discipline into the DevOps and DevSecOps disciplines?
So I think that's a really good question also, because I think that in my mind, the tools inform the discipline and the discipline informs the tools. So it's sort of like, unless you have a vocabulary, you have a hard time expressing a thought, as I have clearly during the show. A tool that informs how you're going to be developing things, then that's going to help develop and keep the discipline of how you the approach for as you go across using these tools across multiple teams. I'm a big believer in keep it simple, but I'm also a big believer in, you know, making sure that you're doing something from end to end across the way. I don't know that you need to have a separate tool for each little component. It becomes a lot harder to keep track of what each little widget is doing. It to make it into an analogy that maybe I understand better, and I hope it makes it a little bit easier to see. It's sort of like, if do you need a firewall? I understand about defense in depth, but do you need a firewall at the very perimeter, and then at major perimeters, or do you need a firewall at every single access point into your network? What point do you lose sight of what you're blocking and what you're allowing and what the rules are for accessing into the network? I think it's the same concept applies to these tools that you're using as you're developing the different components in the network.
Well, Lou, I want to come to you with this same question, because you manage development in what is realistically a pretty complex environment. Do you see this proliferation of tools as something that is inevitable, something that in fact is required by the combination of the environment and the discipline? Or is it something that we've really just sort of become used to. I won't call it pure laziness, but it is sort of a knee-jerk reaction. When we see a problem, well, let's just throw a new tool at it rather than look for a way of solving the problem that doesn't involve bringing a new tool on board. Is this something that the technology wave has taken out of our hands, or is it something where people really could, if there were some compelling reason to, pull back on and do some tool count contraction?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting because sometimes tools actually make things a lot worse. they actually make process harder to do than just doing it manually. You know, I remember back in the days when we used to do managing resources and people on projects by using Excel spreadsheets. And I can tell you that even though that's still digital, it's still a very manual way of doing things. And then you kind of add in DevOps systems or even resource management and task management systems into the mix. And then now you have a more complex system that's sometimes hard for people to grasp and actually go and use on a daily basis, even in agile processes. And they just rather go back and look at a spreadsheet, right? And I think that it happens all over the place. Even in development, when it comes to tooling, whether it's depending on the technology or the platform that you're on, you have different tools for everything, different tools to testing, unit testing, different tools for automation, different tools for builds and deployment, and different tools for, JIT admin access to servers and so on and so forth. And it just kind of goes on and on and on. And I think, again, as things get more complex, especially in the cloud services realm, more tools. More complex tools. Now, the winners are going to be here that are going to consolidate these things into solutions, things that are end-to-end solutions that provide means to the end so that you can actually start out with something and end with something and you get it as one big package. And I think that that's where a lot of organizations are going. And then this depends on the discipline too. So you might have a project manager that wants to understand the deployment cycle. Well, they can do that by following the end-to-end solutions. And I think that's kind of where a lot of organizations are going, but that doesn't stop other parts of the organization from using their own tools. So I think, I can honestly say, even here when I work at Microsoft, I can go from one organization to the other, a development org, and they might use completely different things. Even though the company has its own services and has its own tools, they might use other things. And so it's just really dependent on the need, the environment, the platform, and what people are used to. So I think I just think it's a problem all over the place, and it will continue to be one until you get these kind of, one set of solutions that really people can bank on.
You know, I understand a lot of this because even as a writer, I use tools for writing that my colleagues don't use. Why? Well, because they simply work for my flow. They work to let me be productive. So I get it. But I also understand that I am a problem for our IT support people. I'm probably a problem for our IT security people. And I would certainly be more of a problem if I were working inside an office more of the time. Now, this is an issue that's going to be ongoing because we are continuing to watch the ideal infrastructure and the ideal deployment methodology evolve. So I'm looking forward to continuing to have this discussion with my co-host, and I would love to have this with the Twiat Riot, all of the people listening. So if you have thoughts on the proliferation of tools and what it means for security, we'd love to hear from you. Hit us up over on Twitter with some direct messages or just with hashtags. Let us know what you think. I would love to get a bigger slice of the enterprise IT pie answering a question like this. And with that, it's time to bring this particular bite to a close. Lou, it's back to you.
Thanks, Kurt. Well, folks, you've done it again. You've sat through another hour of a Best Dang Enterprise podcast, according to 9 out of 10 El Dente Security Tools. But I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially my co-host in crime, starting with our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, always great to have you here, my friend. Thank you so much for actually a pretty great bite there as well. Can you tell maybe the folks at home where they can find you, all of your work and all of your writing?
Well, as always, you can find my writing at Dark Reading, and especially in the section called The Edge, which is where we're doing some feature pieces and taking a little bit different approach to corporate security. I've got a piece up right now that went live today on poisoning attacks. You know, we hear about poisoning, DNS, ARP poisoning, cash poisoning. What do they mean? What's going on? And how can you protect your organization from them? There we go. A murderer's row of poisoning attacks. Go ahead. Take a look. Let me know what you think. Hit me up on Twitter at KG4GWA or over on Instagram at Kurt_Franklin. Always love to hear from you. Can't wait to see you again next time.
Thanks, Kurt. Well, another one of my favorite people and co-hosts in crime, Heather Williams. She also had a great bite today. Heather, where can the folks find you and all of your work?
Well, you can find my snark at Mo Better Wi-Fi on Twitter. Since some dumbass decided to make me management, I haven't been as active because my days have been pretty full. But if anybody's going to be in the D.C. area next week, I will be bringing Mo Better Wi-Fi to the Black Hat Trainings event that's going to be happening out there. Stop by the knock and say hi to us. We appreciate coffee, and we might even give you the PSK.
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for being here. I wouldn't want to do the show without you. But we also have to thank you as well. You are the person who drops in each and every week to watch and listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. I want to make it easy for you to watch and listen each and every week to catch up on your enterprise news. Now, you go out right now to our show page, twit.tv/twit. There you'll find all of our amazing back episodes, plus all the show notes, co-host information, guest information, and of course, all the show links that we do during the show, the stories that we do in the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you actually get those helpful subscribe and download links to support the show. You get the audio version, video version of your choice, and listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications. It's really the best way to stay on top of your enterprise news each and every week. So after you subscribe, you want me to share the show with your friends, families, and coworkers as well. I can tell you I've shared the show with my coworkers, and they actually love staying on top of their enterprise news, especially during their transit into work each day. So definitely share it with them. After you subscribe, also remember we do the show live each and every week, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays at live.twit.tv. A little different this week, but I think next week we'll be back to regular schedule. So come see how the show is run behind the scenes live. Now, if you're going to watch the show live, you might as well jump into the chat room live as well at irc.twit.tv. We love the chat room. They have some really great characters in there, and we always get really great content from them as well. Now, don't forget, the chat room is great, but you can't always be connected to the internet, right? Well, that's where the chat room is great if you're going to be connected. But if you're not going to and you want to catch up on the discussion, check out the new twit.community website. It's where all of our hosts, our shows, and all of the Twit armies over there. And they have some great topics, discussions, and people. Check out and see what's more. This way, you don't have to be, it's all off-peak time. You don't have to be online to do it. Once you get back online, you can actually check it out at twit.community. Also, don't forget, you can follow me at twitter.com/LouMM. There you'll see all the great stuff that I do during the week and on my weekend projects. But if you want to see what I do at Microsoft, go check out dev.office.com. There you'll see all the latest and greatest tools that you can actually customize Office to be more productive for your organization. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support us each and every week doing Twit, and we couldn't do the show without them. Also, thank you to all the engineers at Twit. And of course, thank you to our loyal producer, as well as one of our co-hosts, Mr. Brian Chiebert. He actually gets all the show notes going. He gets all the bookings and the plans for the show. We really couldn't do this show without him. Now, before we sign out, we have to thank our TD for today, Victor. Victor, you know, we had a pretty good set of topics today, but what was the main topic of today's show?
I got two of them. So the first one is don't throw spaghetti on the wall because it will stick. And then the other one is I learned that Lou does a great Jim Carrey impression.
This is true. This is true. But I would say al dente spaghetti doesn't stick. But I would say you were really close. Maybe next time. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for being here.
All righty then.
Just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the Enterprise, just keep quiet.